Painful, I guess, for Marc-Andre Fleury to move off of a franchise that he was, like I said, the face of when he was plucked from the Pittsburgh Penguins, wins his first ever Vezina. They go out in disappointing fashion to the Montreal Canadiens. But isn't it weird the way they've handled him? He wins his first Vezina and finds out that he's been traded via Twitter. What do you make of the whole Marc-Andre Fleury tenure in Vegas?
Well, it makes for a great movie.
Yeah.
I mean, he gets picked, you know, you saw the emotions when he left Pittsburgh. This is a guy that clearly loves the game. You see all the practical jokes. He's arguably one of the most popular teammates. And I mean, I've never been part of an organization, but guys just feed off his energy and his natural, you know, love of the game. And that smile's so genuine. But, you know, the guy takes him to the finals in his first year and he's the talk of the town and, you know, gets off to a slow start. And, you know, there's changes made. All of a sudden, Robin Lehner's in and Fleury's on the outs to try to move him, can't move him. And instead of sulking, he just goes in and wins the crease back, wins the Vezina. And then, unfortunately, you know, he had the bad play behind the net against the Habs that probably stuck him a Crimmins crawl a little bit. And it's just, if it is true, you heard on Twitter, it's just not a real, this is the best hockey. The hockey's, I think, across the board, you say it's the best human beings in the world, and they're such known for their class and their grace. And I think there's been a few instances over the last week that have kind of really just kind of unforced errors. You know, what do you call it? Friendly fire. Just can't get out of the way of yourself sometimes. And it's unfortunate, but you just got to stay positive, hopefully, for him. He still wants to play. I know there's talk of him still wanting to play, but possibly staying closer to home. So if that's the case, you know, Chicago would have to make a decision whether they want to move him back west to a contender, whether it be, you know, like Colorado, doesn't Jake Grubauer, he'd be a perfect fit there to go back in and go toe-to-toe with Vegas and maybe exact some revenge. That would make for a great storyline. It's just unfortunate if he did. Sometimes you never know. I mean, I spoke with Alan. He cares about his players as much as any agent ever would, sometimes to a fault with some of his tweets, but he loves his players and clearly not a happy man about the way it was handled, and he was pretty adamant that he was informed on Twitter. So not a great look for an organization that seems to do almost everything right in Vegas, and it's the place everybody wants to play. And trust me, the lack of candor or the way this was handled will not keep any free agents from going to Vegas with their cap situation and the way that town has taken to their hockey team. But c'est la vie.
Mike, you used to always talk to Brian Burke about this because I'm just like so fascinated by this when it because you know we're most of us who are on the station have never been GMs or assistant GMs. So can you take us sort of inside the week, like what is going on in a in an NHL sort of you know personnel meeting type of room this week? Like how often are you talking to agents? Does it only go through agents as opposed to players? Do you got to like gigantic board of potential free agency? Like what if you're the general manager this week of an NHL team, like can you give me a sense of just what your week is like right now?
Well, it's frantic for sure, but it's fun energy. It's really fun energy. Really, you have your guy in our situation in Los Angeles. It also depends where you're at in your build. Like if you're on the cusp of winning, it's a different feel. If you're selling, you know, you just come off, like say you're a Buffalo Sabres or the Arizona Coyotes, you've got a completely different feel heading into this market because you've clearly made yourself sellers. But in our case, when we were, you know, when we were starting to make our runs and we were good, you just basically have a wall with your next 3-4 years and we called them boxes and slots for where your players were up. And when you're, you know, this player might sound great, but you have to be aware that in 2 years, Drew Doughty's up, et cetera, and you've got to have X amount of dollars slotted out. So as much as your feverish pitch to build this dream team in the interim, you have to be careful. And I mean, I think that's kind of what, to a certain extent, certainly Toronto's not worried about it because all their stars are inked for a lot of money. But like a team like Vancouver that's got their two young guys in play, they've really got to be cautious of what they're spending, knowing that their two young franchise players are still up and are going to need money. So you have to have money available down the road when it's time to pay the players, pay your superstars. And in our case, we were fortunate. We paid our superstars, and I've used the term, and it's not now. We paid our superstars because they had won, not before they won. And yeah. I think that helps. because when you start to make, you know, if you can look up and see a couple banners, even your ownership group understands that some of the pain you're going through in a new rebuild is worth it because we reached the goal. So again, not dodging your question, but it's a different thing. It almost has to be specific for each team. And in our situation, it was like, you know, the 1 year we made a really poor decision on, I've said this, it could have gone down as probably Dean Lombardi. It still was one of the best trades in Los Angeles Kings history. And we required Marian Gaborik at the deadline for a second round pick. And he went on and he scored 17 goals in the playoffs, but his contract was up.
Yeah.
We should have given him a big hug and a Stanley Cup ring and said, thanks very much, Marian. And instead he just had a history of in last terms of his deal. He was outstanding. He shot the lights out. If you give him long-term, there was a lot of games missed, a lot of inconsistencies. And unfortunately we showed him the money. That's how he put it. Show me the money. We showed him the money and he showed us straight to the hospital ward. And then I think about five different teams own a piece of that contract now. And in the end, like when we looked at our wall, you know, we thought, wow, we have a guy that's going to play with, you know, it's almost like the Matt Sundin that never had a winger. We thought we had somebody that could play with Anze Kopitar for the rest of his career. And in turn, it was really just lightning in a bottle. They didn't play well consistently at all out of the gate, nor did Kopi. You know, he's a tough guy to play when he's just a pure finisher. And we ended up kind of, in the long term, it cost us like to re-sign a Justin Williams or some real core pieces we had to let go because of that contract. So a lot goes into it, particularly when you're still smelling the fumes of the champagne like Tampa Bay is right now. You've got to be really conscious that you don't make decisions so much with your heart. You got to really include your head as well and have a good balance, because that's why you maintain. As I said, it's hard to get up to the top of the hill, but it's really hard to stay there once you're there.
Yeah, Toronto Maple Leafs not smelling the fumes of champagne. They're like as far away from that as we are from Champagne, France right now, feels like. Losing the first round to the Montreal Canadiens. They got just over $9 million in cap space. And we talked to Elliot Friedman yesterday, and he said that the number one priority is to get a second goaltender to compete with Jack Campbell. And Jack Campbell did a great job, but the idea of having him shoulder a significant load for the first time in his career, considering the age, considering the injury history, obviously not tenable. I'm really interested as to what they do with that third line center position, because Alex Kerfoot he played his best hockey in the postseason, frankly. It was a guy that quite often throughout the regular season didn't really look like his best fit was up the middle on that third line. Do you think Kyle Dubas is happy enough to go into a season with him as the de facto third line center, or is that a position you think they're going to try and upgrade?
Well, I think, first of all, although we've always discussed what a huge fan of Jack Campbell I am, and I also do believe, though, that they need another proven guy. It's probably fortunate. I mean, if they go after somebody that could be considered better than Jack, like a Darcy Kemper, who I think is the top goalie available right now, but they're asking for a first-round pick, which I don't think the Leafs have a first-round pick to give up. But you also have to find line. You want to, you know, give Jack that bone that he's still in the mix to be the number one guy. But it's too important a position, especially with Jack's histories of injury, that is the most important spot for me. They clearly, you know, it sounds like they've moved on from Freddie. There's going to be enough pieces out there to make a real affordable pitch to have a good goaltender in. But the one guy, and this is just my personal take, Nick Foligno for me is so critical to this group in Toronto, and it's and plus he can play third line, so he can play up and down your lineup. But for me, with the Leafs, why I thought this was a great trade at the time, and the injury was unfortunate, and that's the only way I know there's injuries and you got to get through it and it still breaks everybody's heart, but that was the kind of pickup for me. Nick Foligno was one of the few players in the National Hockey League right now that are a 24/7 captain. And for me, a 24/7 captain is somebody that just doesn't lead when the wind's at his back and he's scoring goals and he's got a smile on his face. This guy is a leader all the time. And I think everybody makes a big deal about what an incredible, like, Jumbo Joe. Like, Joe's, he's kind of fun. Like, he's a ton of fun and he's a leader, he's a competitor. But Nick Foligno can beat you on the ice. He can beat you in the alley. And he also, I think, now that he's got that, you know, he's kind of had a little read on what that dressing room's like. I think he's truly passionate that, you know, his dad, he thinks it's unfinished business. He feels they gave up a ton for me. And, you know, I want to come back and help. But he's going to hold guys like Marner and Matthews to the fire because he's just got that. It's part of his family, and he plays hard. He'll fight. He'll score. And I just think, and again, it's no knock on Tavares or the leadership group, but I think Johnny's leadership wavers sometimes when he's slumping. You can just see it in his body language. It's just, he's a superstar, but it's just a natural trait for him. Whereas when Nick Foligno, if he feels he's slumping a little bit, he'll go out and grab somebody and pound him out. He never sits idle and watches his team fluctuate. He's always involved. So that's my thought on that, because I know you like to talk about the Leafs, but I think Nick Foligno is so critical, and if they lose him and they lose Hyman, now all of a sudden you're talking about all the intangibles that were supposed to make this team different in the playoffs are gone again.
That's interesting, Mike, you know, because we've heard obviously they're talking to Nick Foligno, but also Minnesota seems to be perhaps on his radar. So that's something to watch. You know, one more on the Leafs, and, you know, given you've been in the league, I think you'd have an interesting take on this. Like, the obviously that when the regular season starts, they're playing every game in the regular season. They're obviously playing to win. You got to take the approach, you know, one game at a time, et cetera, all the cliches. But the real reality of this team is only going to be judged on one thing, and that is the playoffs and ultimately to get out of that first round. Organizationally, like, how much of a challenge is it to not – how do I sort of say this? How much of a challenge is it to not hyper-focus on the goal of advancing in the playoffs while – having to deal with the real realities of a very tough regular season in a much harder division? Do you know what I'm saying, Mike? Like, they're going to be judged on one thing, but they can't even get to that judgment unless they play well in the regular season.
Well, if they don't play well in the regular season, it's going to be a whole other different conversation going on, because once again, this is a team that's not only going to be judged by, I mean, they have not won a round. So they're going to be judged. It's the funniest thing, because even if they win around, they're almost going to be judged. They've got to go deep. Yep. They've got to go deep for this to be a success. I mean, if they go seven games or whatever and beat a team out in overtime and win that first round and then throw a parade because they finally got over that hump and lose the next round, that's problematic. Okay, this team has clearly showed that they can be as good as anybody in the regular season. They've got a lot of pieces, and I will again say, you know, it's tough when you lose your captain and you lose the piece that you just brought in, and, you know, Muzzin gets hurt, but there's a lot of teams that withstood injuries, and, you know, I mean, there are games that Hedman missed. There was last, the Tampa Bay Lightning won around when a cup, when Stamkos missed everything. You just got to be able to overcome that. You can't lose a Jake Muzzin and everything just goes all to hell. You got to have the depth to come up. And again, when you've got so much money invested in so few players, that's why I do believe that the heat that goes with it, you can't not be able to afford a top flight goaltender or what have you. Like, I mean, obviously Tampa has the best left heat, but you can't not be able to go out and get that top defenseman. And I mean, then have one of your top young players go goalless. You just can't have it. You know, you certainly can't have it again. And I know that they're a lot tougher on their guys internally, more internally than they are externally, which is sometimes nice in the market that eats people up. But hey, you guys all kind of played games to get the money you wanted, and now it's time to buck up. You know, and I've always said Nylander started this, Marner jumped on board, and now in fairness, it's like, you know, I would never have thought that. I mean, I always thought Hyman was, if there's anybody that's going to take a hometown discount, but clearly he sat back and watched what's transpired and said, well, I know what I'm worth. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going elsewhere. So now I don't think this team's window is closed by any, but he's going to have to get creative again. It's one thing to have cap space. It's another thing to have the quality of player that you need to get better to fill that cap space with. So it'll be interesting. I mean, again, there's some pieces there. I know Wayne Simmonds is back, and, you know, I think Jason Spezza was just so fun to watch the last, you know, couple of years with him kind of finding himself again. But you've said it. It's going to be a playoff judgment, and this team, his young stars that are making, like, somebody posted it. I know it's that when you look at the cores in Colorado, and I mean, this is the first time they're going through it now with with Landeskog. But when you look at that core in Boston and the core of how many players make so much money as opposed to just, you know, Nylander, Marner's and Matthew, it's tough. It's tough to add those other pieces, those pieces to the puzzle when you don't have money to spread around. And I do believe the goaltending's critical. Morgan Rielly's critical in all this to me. I mean, I think he's very undervalued and he wants to be here. He's probably one of the few guys that will take less money to stay a Leaf, and people are trying to chase him out of town. So it's a tough one, but if anybody is proud of wearing that jersey, I think Morgan Rielly represents what they need to be like, and they need to have more Morgan Rielly's and Nick Foligno's than whatever. I heard Josh Hosang might be providing, you know, right, up for a PTO or something like that. Like the last, like, and there's an exceptionally talented guy. I mean, they got good face value out of Galchenyuk.
Yeah.
But the last thing they need is another Harlem Globetrotter, you know, throwing things through his legs and doing the cross goals right now. They need to get. And I love the skill, and they draft well, and they've got a lot of skill. But it's time to get mucky in the trenches in the playoffs, and Josh Hosang is not the answer.